probably been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
And a couple players falling on top of it, including Ehlers. He gets back up, maintains possession, and shot it into his own goal! Ehlers shot it into his own goal! Michael Hutchinson was not expecting that, and the Avalanche win in overtime.
Well, that's one way to lose a hockey game. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Of course, we start with last night's Jets Avalanche game.
What a weird bounce.
What a weird ending to a game. You have, the Jets with possession after really being hemmed in their own zone for the majority of that overtime. They get that one excellent scoring opportunity with Blake Wheeler where he gets a breakaway in on Semyon Varlamov. Varlamov makes the save. The Jets finally sort of regain possession in their own zone. And Nikolaj Ehlers, with the puck on the stick, he thinks he hears some players coming. He decides to pass it behind the net. The pass is offline. And Michael Hutchinson's not paying attention. And the puck is in the back of the net. Just an absolute fluke way to lose a game that the Winnipeg Jets, they get a well-deserved 1 point. Especially for being able to battle back down 2 goals in the second period. Again, ruining that second period in narrative, though. But just a bizarre ending to a pretty decent hockey game where you can argue that Colorado was probably the better of the two teams, but wasn't by an overwhelmingly dramatic margin, I would say.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned the Blake Wheeler breakaway that happened right before Nikolaj Ehlers scored into his own net. And not only was it a breakaway, there was no one around him.
No one around.
I mean, he had tons of time, and you kind of thought, okay, well, this is how it's supposed to end. Blake Wheeler going into the Thursday game against the Arizona Coyotes had been on this 11-game goalless drought, right?
Yeah.
And then he scored in consecutive games, so you thought, okay, Blake Wheeler's got the hot hand here. He's going to end it. And the Jets are going to get their third victory in a row. But unfortunately, as you mentioned, a really weird ending to the game. I don't think you can put all of the blame on Nikolaj Ehlers or Michael Hutchinson. I mean, it happened. And the Jets played an excellent game. They could have easily got the 2 points. I think what's the most important here, guys, is it in the last 3 games, the Jets have got 5 of a possible 6 points. And I think they're playing their best hockey of the year. So, Ehlers has been excellent on that top line with Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine. I think that's something that, you move on. You have a game coming up tomorrow afternoon against the LA Kings. I don't think you dwell too much on it, Dave.
Yeah, no, I thought definitely it was an unusual circumstance. I mean, Michael Hutchinson appeared to be a little bit asleep. I mean, you have to be prepared. The puck's in your zone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was a little bit surprised because especially the overhead view, he just didn't look crisp. Like, he didn't look like he was set. And so you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself, like, it's not as if the puck's in the neutral zone and you can kind of catch a second to catch your breath or it's in the Avalanche zone. It's 20 feet away from you. So, unfortunate. I mean, Ehlers really, he's a goal scorer. He likes to score goals and, finished yesterday with a goal and 2 assists. Unfortunately, for the Jets fans, one of them was an own goal. But I don't think it diminishes what the team did. I mean, it actually had the feel, when the Avalanche got their second goal, it actually had a bit of a feel of, okay, well, you know what? This is a tired Jets team. They've played a lot of hockey. This game might be a bit of a stinker. And, they'll try and take the, well, we've played well in two of our last three games, and we'll get set and play, we'll get ready for the Kings. And then You know, I was count me as surprised. Like, you know, I was looking at their goal differential in the second period, right? And it just continues to climb. And at that point, when they scored the two goals against, I think it was either 23 or 24 to 10 in the second period. Now, of course, Wheeler and Scheifele, you know, evened it up after this game, but or after this period, I should say, just for, you know, for this period's sake. But, you know, like, I was impressed by the fact that they came back. They played a nice second period. It was a pretty even third period. I didn't think either team really dominated. And it could have been ended in overtime by either squad. I think both teams had chances. Obviously, Wheeler. I thought, like you said, Drew, I think Colorado probably had the better chances.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, it was a good game. Good road game. And the fact of the matter is that you end up leaving Colorado now having won, you know, two games against, or sorry, you have three or four points against Colorado in 2 weeks. So that's something, because you want to make sure these are the critical games. Like, these are the games that you can't afford to give up points. Like, you really can't look back on the season, you know, come March and April, if you're in the fighting for a playoff spot, and say, well, you know what, we gave up 2 points to Colorado. You know, it was a meaningless game. Well, maybe it seemed meaningless in November, but as we've seen last year, what you do in November has a tremendous impact on what's going to happen to you in March and April.
Well, you know, we talked about, you know, in-division games and how important in-division games are for this Winnipeg Jets team. And you look back now, you know, obviously they get the 1 point last night. Earlier in the week, they take the 2 point. They demolish the Dallas Stars. So that's always, you know, a good in-division win. And then you look back at the end of October, where they take, you know, they take those back-to-back games at home against Dallas and then in Colorado. So they're doing well in division, you know, at least decently so. And more importantly, you know, when you're losing games, you know, for the most, you're at least getting some points. Last year, the problem was they lost so many games clean. And now if you look back, they've got points in one, two, you know, they've got points in five of their last six games. That's a mark. That's what a playoff team does, is that they earn points even when they lose. You know, and we see it. We see the importance of the loser points so often in the NHL at the end of the year, that a team that, you know, oh, look, they might only have, you know, they might have 40 wins in 82 games, or they have 41 wins in 82 games, but then they also have 10 overtime losses. Or 12 overtime losses. And those extra 12 points or those extra 10 points, the games that they can take to overtime where they may not have been really deserving of it, let's say, make a world of a difference. And so we saw last night they get the overtime, they get the loser point there. We saw about two Thursdays ago in Washington where they were down to the Capitals and then they lose in overtime. Those are significant points when you, at the end of the year, most often the team will look back and say those loser points were very helpful for us.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, Drew. And you could say that the hard part of the November schedule is over because you've already played two of the back-to-backs, but you have a back-to-back coming up next weekend with Boston and Carolina on the road, and you've got Chicago coming up at home after the game on Sunday against LA on Tuesday. You've got Minnesota next week. You've got a couple of games against Nashville coming up.
Yeah.
You've got the Devils, who are playing surprisingly well. So, I mean, the schedule is not going to get easier. They have 9 games coming up in 17 days. And, you know, right now, I would say that so far, when you look at how they've done in November, it's been pretty good. And there's a lot of optimism here. I think, you know, the Jets started off the season slowly, and they've picked it up here. And you look at the LA Kings right now, Andrei Kopitar might not be in the lineup. We know Jonathan Quick's not going to be in net. And this LA Kings team, even with Kopitar and Quick, I didn't think was a playoff team this year. So you don't want to take them too lightly here. But, like, certainly the Jets, you know, are in a position right now, you know, to make up some ground in the Western Conference. I believe they're 8th right now in the Western Conference, that second wild card spot. So, you know, they're playing some good hockey here. As long as the Scheifele, Lion A, and Ehlers line, you know, scoring 10 goals a game, they should be fine.
And we'll talk about that performance of that line coming up this hour, and we'll, of course, also preview the Kings and the Jets coming up on Sunday at MTS Center. But, you know, looking back at last night, you know, when it was 2-0, I sort of agreed with you, Dave. I thought you know, the first period was, I thought, a pretty even period for both teams, that they you know, they skated well. It wasn't a lot of action. I mean, I think at one point, maybe midway through the second period, Dennis and Shane on the broadcast said the shots on goal were something like 12-9 at that point in the game. So you thought that was going to be a very, you know, a low total for shots on goal. There wasn't a ton of action. And then once Colorado sort of got those first two goals, that's when the Jets I guess, found their legs. And it's no surprise that it takes them a little bit of time to find their legs on the second half of a back-to-back, you know, as we see. And they found them, I think, for a good 20-25 minute, you know, period of game time.
Yep.
And then I thought they lost them again in overtime, as, you know, Colorado probably should have scored a couple other times before Blake Wheeler even had that opportunity, and then before it ended the way it ended. But, you know, if you're Paul Maurice, I think if you're the Jets themselves, you're not dwelling on last night's loss. There's a lot of positives you can take from that game, in that, you know, you go into a division rival, you battle back from a 2-goal deficit, you take another point there, you know, so you got 3 out of 4 points, as you said, Dave. More positives than negatives out of last night's game.
Well, you don't dwell on it because they were a Blake Wheeler breakaway from getting the 2 points, and they played really well. I agree. I mean, the third period wasn't good. The Jets had 2 shots on net. They're in the second game of a back-to-back,
yeah,
and you kind of expect Colorado to have more energy. And I think, by the way, the Jets benefit from some of these young guys on the roster. You know, I tweeted this out yesterday. I thought Josh Morrissey, again, had an incredible game. Not offensively. The way he plays defensively, and at the end of the day, he is a defenseman. And so I continue to be impressed by the way he's playing on that top pair with Dustin Byfuglien. And when you look at who they were against, guys, that line of Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene, and Mikko Rantanen, and we saw Rantanen got Colorado's first goal, that's a top NHL line. The Colorado Avalanche are a horrible hockey team.
I thought Rantanen was their best player last night.
He was good, and he's only played, you know, 8 games or so. But this Avalanche team, I mean, I like a lot of guys on their team. I like Jerome Iginla. I like Tyson Berry. They've got Eric Johnson. They've got some good players. But overall, I mean, they've scored the fewest goals in the entire league. And this is, I just don't see this team making the playoffs this year.
Well, no.
So, I mean, they got the win yesterday. But I look at them, and really, to me, they're a one-line, two-line team. And Varlamov, you don't know what you're going to get on every single night. So
his numbers entering last night's game had been absolutely horrendous. On the season, Calvin Pickard has been the better of the two goalies for the Avalanche. And, I mean, Varlamov, I mean, he didn't really have to make very many
Shots in the third period.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think that Varlamov, you know, you think back to the first period, Line A's, I mean, he still hasn't, you know, Varlamov still hasn't seen that puck.
That was wild.
That Line A rifled off of the post or the crossbar, whatever it was. Varlamov didn't move.
No, he moved after.
About five seconds after the puck was passed him, the shot was already out of the rink. He doesn't, you know, I can't think of really any great scoring chances that the Jets had that they didn't capitalize on, with the exception of the Wheeler breakaway in overtime.
Ehlers, when he lost that puck, when he was in front. But that wasn't on Varlamov. It was just the ice.
It wasn't even a shot on goal. So, Varlamov was, you know, whatever. You're right. The Colorado Avalanche aren't a very good hockey team.
It was a good road trip, and again, you know, we sound like a broken record here, guys, but you pick up 5 of 6 points against Dallas, Arizona, and Colorado. You've got to be pretty happy with that, and you got to just keep it going against L.A. tomorrow. You got to keep it going against Chicago. Chicago's the hottest team in the league right now.
Yeah.
So that game at home on Tuesday is not going to be an easy one,
no.
And especially now that Panarin's fighting. Just kidding. But, no, I mean, it's a tough schedule that they have for the next few weeks. I think you got to give them credit for the way they've played here the last 3 or 4 games.
It'd be interesting to see what the status of Tyler Myers is. The second time now in 2 weeks in Colorado, he sustained a lower body injury. I went back, I watched the second period, and now I'm convinced that it was that shot, because the next shift, so what happened was there was a play in the Colorado zone. Someone, I think it was Nick Patan, fired the puck across the rink to Myers, who tried to keep it in the Avalanche zone with his foot. It appeared to go off his foot, and he stayed in because the puck was in the Avalanche zone for the remainder of that shift. But then when he came off, he looked tentative from what I could see on the TV. And then the next shift, I was looking at his time on ice, and the next shift he was on for 4 seconds and then didn't come back. So my suspicion, I think, is confirmed that it most likely occurred a little. There was a lot of friendly fire last night, the Hutchinson own goal by Ehlers, and I think, you know, Myers being taken out by that shot by, I think it was Patan, in the second period. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. Jacob Trouba could have gotten fished his wish and become the second pairing right side defenseman by virtue of the fact that Tyler Myers may be out, but we don't know how for how long.
Well, you'll, of course, the Jets travel back to Winnipeg today. They're not going to skate, so there won't be any update on Tyler.
No, I think they came back last night.
No, they stayed overnight in
Denver.
Oh,
they did that again.
Yeah, they stayed overnight in Denver again. They travel back today, won't skate today, won't be a pregame skate tomorrow because of the early start time. So there's probably no update on any of the status of any of the Jets' injured players until Paul Maurice meets with the media probably around 11 a.m. or so tomorrow morning.
Drew, are you the new Jets travel coordinator?
I'm the assistant to the traveling secretary, if you want to know
our
the
boy
truth.
Krabby.
Yeah. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' defense with Jacob Trouba back in the lineup. Now a curveball, of course, with Tyler Myers' status. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Definitely excited. I've been watching how we play and the kind of game we have and the type of players. So just try to fit in, not really try to do too much, just try to kind of fit my way in and see what I can do. It's exciting. I mean, it's exciting hockey to watch. There's no quit. I think that's the biggest thing I've seen is it doesn't really matter what the score is or who's playing. Everybody's going pretty hard, and I think that's a pretty good quality to have in the team.
Jacob Trouba.
Don't give it away now, Drew.
Making his season debut last night for the Winnipeg Jets. 23 minutes and 14 seconds worth of ice time.
It's a lot of ice time.
It's a decent amount of ice time.
For your first game of the year?
Yeah, it was the second most of all the defensemen, which I think is probably part of that. It has to do with certainly Tyler Myers leaving in the second period.
Yep.
I mean, he only got 10 minutes of ice time, so obviously there was only two right-side defensemen for the Winnipeg Jets last night.
We're talking about usage.
Yeah, we're talking about usage. And Trouba stepped up with 23 minutes and 14 seconds, saw some power play time, 2.5 minutes on the power play, shorthanded, 3 minutes and 27 seconds, and 17 minutes and 17 seconds of even strength time, accounted for two shots on goal last night. I thought Jacob Trouba looked pretty good in his return to the Jets lineup after the long layoff due to the contract dispute.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Jacob Trouba, you know, we expected if he wasn't going to play last night, he was certainly going to make his season debut tomorrow afternoon against the LA Kings, right? You mentioned, Drew, he played 23 minutes, and yeah, you saw him jumping up into the play several times trying to make things happen offensively, and, you know, that's not the easiest position to come into, not only in the second game of a back-to-back, Dave, but you're talking about a team that has been playing really well heading into the game. They'd won two in a row, right? So I think you got to give Trouba a lot of credit here. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the position that him and his agent took at the start of the season, but certainly, you know, he looked good last night. And you look at Tyler Myers and the possibility that he's not going to play tomorrow. And, you know, the Jets need Jacob Trouba right now. He could play on the second pair with Tobias Enstrom tomorrow. He certainly is going to play in the top four if Myers is out. So, yeah, Drew, I agree. I thought he looked good out there. I don't think he was the best player on the ice, but certainly, you know, you could see that he had his legs. He hasn't played a lot of games. You know, his last game would have been at the World Cup.
Yeah, September 21st was his last game at the World Cup with Team North America.
His last game with the Jets was like 7 months ago, which is like the last game of the season, April 9th, I guess, against LA.
Yeah. And
so, you know, I actually thought Trouba played well. I mean, he didn't. He himself, after the game, spoke about not playing particularly well in the first period. He said that he felt a lot of rust. But, I mean, I think Jets fans saw what they've come to kind of get used to with his, you know, offensive ability, his vision. You know, he was carrying the puck a lot.
Had a couple good rushes into the Avalanche zone. They didn't materialize into scoring chances, but he had a couple good rushes.
No, but the fact of the matter is when you have Jacob Trouba in the lineup, your lineup is better. I mean, that's just the reality. When you add Jacob Trouba to this mix, you know, a healthy Tyler Myers, a healthy Jacob Trouba, a healthy Dustin Byfuglien, healthy Tobias Enstrom, Josh Morrissey, and then whomever is the sixth guy. I mean, that is a solid defensive core for this Jets team moving forward. And so, I mean, moving forward for how long, we don't know. But for right now, as it is presently constructed, that is a solid, you know, defensive core. And again, we don't know the extent of Myers. It could have just been something that was bothering him for that the rest of that game. He might just be gone for a little bit.
It could be a tweak. Or it could be
whatever. And so the fact is that, it, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Coach Maurice, moving forward, continues to use Jacob Trouba. But, I mean, after the first period, he was the most used defenseman, ahead of Byfuglien.
You know, talking about ice time, guys, and I realize Paul Maurice has been criticized quite a bit for not only how he uses his defensemen but forwards. But I love, personally, the way that he's been putting Nick Batan out there on the power play, and he put Jacob Trouba out on the power play and on the PK. So he's coming back to the lineup, and he's not kind of, you know, just easing him into the lineup, playing 12 or 14 minutes a game, but he puts him out there in special team situations. I really got to give Maurice credit, and we know that Maurice and Trouba have had a bit of a shaky pass. Let's just leave it at that, as far as, you know, Jacob Trouba not playing his right side. So, you know, Trouba comes back, and it really looks like he hasn't missed a beat.
I thought he, you know, he had a couple good, you know, scoring chances. There was the pass from Nick Batan that you mentioned there. He hit, I mean,
how are they going to send Nick Batan down, Drew, when the Jets get healthy? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you can't send him down. He's been too good.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear
how
that
do you send any of these guys?
Well, I mean, it's clear that Bermistrov and Thorburn come out of the lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's much question about that.
No.
But you're right. There are every other player that has...
Andrew Kopp has been good. Marco Dano's been good.
Yeah. There are very difficult decisions coming to the Winnipeg Jets and to Paul Maurice when they're healthy. Now, they're not going to be fully healthy anytime soon. They got about probably 6 to 8 weeks before they're going to be fully healthy. That's the time frame estimated for Joel Armia,
yep,
and for Sean Mathias, is that they're looking at, you know, between, you know, a month and a half, 2 months or so.
Yeah, but if you think about it, that was the easy ones when you had Bermistrov and, you know, Thorburn come out for the, you know, for when you were temper. But now you've got all these, because you've got Little and Stafford and Perreault,
yeah,
right? And now, to be honest with you,
is there
Maurice,
two Perreaults?
What? No, maybe. But Maurice did a, I did an injury update on the site because, you know, he's kind of, we've got different numbers about when these guys are coming back. And essentially he said 3 or 4 days before they got on the ice. Now that was on Monday or Tuesday for Little and for Stafford. And he said Perreault, when he's on the ice, will be quick. But he said he wasn't on the ice yet. And he felt, it almost sounded like, because, sorry, we did it on, I did it on Monday and I did it on Tuesday. And so on Monday, he said that he didn't expect Perreault to be back, as wasn't progressing as quickly as he expected. So it may not be happening right away. You know, like these guys, especially Stafford. Stafford's the one that kind of caught me off guard because, you know, originally it was never represented as anything significant. And I was going back, and I was, like I said, I was doing this injury report, and I was trying to figure out, like,
what happened, and the various ways, because
realistically, Stafford at this point is week to week, right? Because, or was, should have been week to week, but really was never of any major significance. So,
not like Mathias and Armia, when they went down, you knew that they were going to, and when Little went out, you knew it was going to be a significant,
right,
long-term,
yeah,
injury.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost immediately. You didn't, yeah, notice the Stafford injury,
but,
is what
but
you're saying.
I agree.
Someone needs to get a medical degree here so we can figure all of this out.
No, but I agree with Ezzy. Like, if you look at the players who have come in from the Moose system, you know, and obviously these guys are all familiar with the Jet system since they played in it, but it's going to make for very interesting discussions in the Jets office as to who will be sitting in the press box, as to who will be sent down. Because, of course, these guys are factoring in who can be sent down easily.
Sure.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Paul Maurice lives in a tough world where it's win now as well as develop. So,
well, guys, if we ever had a better, I'm saying we, I guess the Jets, I meant,
mm-hmm,
but here in Winnipeg, has there ever been a better feeder system from the AHL,
no,
to the NHL than now? I mean, gone are the days of the Jets, no offense, calling up Patrice Cormier and hoping that he can play 8 or 10 minutes on the fourth line for the Jets. Now you're calling up guys like Andrew Kopp and Marco Dano and, you know, possibly Jack Roslovic later in the year. So, I mean, the talent that the Jets have at their disposal, Pascal Vincent's doing an excellent job with the Moose. They lost last night, Dave, but they won 4 in a row previous to that. They're looking a lot better than they did last year, but you have some really good players down there, Brendan Lemieux, Chase DeLeo. Like, there's a lot of talent. Those guys haven't even got into an NHL game. So you're talking about guys like Marco Dano, a first-round pick, possibly being sent down to the Moose when guys like Perreault and Little come back. So, you know, it's incredible to see the depth in this organization. And, you know, they have to, you know, turn this into results and get into the playoffs and start to win some playoff rounds. But certainly, you know, the guys that they have drafted, most of the guys they've drafted are currently either in the NHL or in the AHL. It's very impressive.
You know, Kyle Connor's a guy whose name is, he hasn't been overwhelmingly impressive as of late. I wouldn't be surprised if he was one of the guys who maybe goes and spends a little bit of time down at the AHL level with Jack Roslovic. See if he can get find that scoring touch. He's, you know, only played 10 minutes of the game last night.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if Kyle Connor, you know, he's had a pretty good audition up here. I'm wondering if he's the guy who, one of the guys who maybe gets, a look back at the AHL.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, look what's the benefit to Jack Roslovic. I mean, the guy plays top line minutes for the Moose at the AHL level. He's doing exceptionally well. And the fact of the matter is, you don't have the same pressure of success that you do here in Winnipeg with the Jets. So in terms of his development, it's not the end of the world. Like, again, sometimes people see it as this huge demotion. You know,
look how it benefited. Sorry to cut you off, Dave. Look how it benefited Adam Lowry last year. As far as I'm concerned, Adam Lowry has really picked up his game this year. And, you know, he went down to the AHL for just a little bit. But I really think that helped him.
Well, and you know what? And it's funny because sometimes a player just needs a little bit of a punch in the face. Not literally, but, you know, just to be like, look, you can be sent down. You know, like this is, you're not gifted a spot. Now, Lowry got lucky because if you remember, Scheifele got injured. And that's why they had to call Lowry back. So he was only with the Moose for 4 games. But it was still probably enough of a kind of jolt to his system to say, okay, well, I got to, you know, make sure that I'm doing what I have to do to maintain my position with the Jets, because nothing is sacrosanct.
Nobody can be comfortable. This isn't like years before.
I mean,
some people can be comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, like if you like, it's like when Reese says, "Look, there's 3 guys on our defensive core that aren't being touched," you know, and then the rest are open spots. That was prior to obviously Trouba being back in the lineup. But I'm just saying, like, so yeah, like obviously guys like Wheeler and those guys are fine. But like, yeah, I know what you're saying. You're right, Drew. The fact of the matter is, if Marco Dano doesn't keep playing the way he's doing, and if you know Nick Petan isn't having the effect that he's having now, again, it just goes to show you though what happens when you put an offensive player like Nick Petan, who's got very nice vision. Obviously, he's a smaller player, but he's got great vision with other talented offensive players.
Is it tremendous vision? Is it the best vision ever?
I wouldn't say it's the best vision ever. I would say it's pretty good vision, though.
But it's not tremendous vision?
Not tremendous.
2020.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
No, actually, 2020 is not the best. I think it's 2013. Little known fact.
No, it's 2016, Dave.
All right. Can't top that line.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the performance of the Scheifele, Ehlers, and Line A line. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Down low, out in front, a shot, they score! Ehlers out in front for Scheifele, a one-timer at the side of the net, and we are tied at 2. Giveaway in the slot, here's Ehlers, who shoots and scores! And the Jets lead it 3-1. Pots the line for Scheifele, cutting toward the net, now in front, a shot, they score! Guess who? Patrick Laine! A hat trick here tonight!
Music to the ears of Winnipeg Jets fans. Scheifele, Laine, and Ehlers tear up the score sheet. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 25 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, Paulie's play-by-play voice, that's music to Jets fans' ears.
That is. Those are him calling Winnipeg Jets goals, and
yep,
his dulcet tones would be music, yes, to their ears. Our voices, unfortunately, nails on a chalkboard.
Yep.
Yeah. Nails on a chalkboard, cat getting their tail stepped on. I'm trying to think what else. What else is a terrible noise? My singing voice.
Nickelback.
Nickelback, apparently. Well done there, Ezzy. Anyways, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine. I mean, you can only engage in so much hyperbole, but it's not hyperbole based on what these guys have been doing lately for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, their performance over the last 5 games, you know, a combined 29 points for those 3 players over the past 5 games.
Yep.
These are numbers that you have to talk about them in the breath of being the best line in hockey when you put up numbers like that.
Yeah, and I think it starts with Mark Scheifele. As Dave knows, you know, since early February, Mark Scheifele has more points than anybody else in the entire league. And that alone, to me, is incredible. But when you look at the skill guys, and we know how much skill there is on this line, I mean, you've got 3 top 10 picks. with Ehlers, Lyonnais, and Scheifele, all guys that have been drafted by the Jets in the first round, and all of these guys can score. And they're all different players. And when you think of this line and the potential of this line, and Lyonnais is 18, Ehlers is 20, Scheifele's only 23, he's the old man of the line. I mean, this line is going to score so many goals. You know, we were joking about this. I was watching the game last night with Huss at a local watering hole, and it's almost like the Jets have Howerchuk and Solani on the same team, right? Scheifele being Howerchuk, Lyonnais being Solani. Like, Scheifele, like, we haven't even seen the best, I don't think, of Scheifele. We haven't seen the best, obviously, of Lyonnais or Ehlers, and they're at the top of the league in scoring. And I think it's almost, you know, too good to be true for some Jets fans, but it's so fun, I can say, for me personally, and I think I speak for everybody, covering this team right now is so much fun. I mean, and you're hearing, you know, all of the accolades, Dave, you know, from across the hockey world. I mean, this line is it's really unstoppable right now.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'm with you, as I wrote about it yesterday on LegalCurve.com, about Scheifele's kind of rise in the NHL as one of the top centers. He has 57 points since the game before the All-Star break in Phoenix, or sorry, in Glendale.
Since February 18th last year,
yeah,
42 games played, 27 goals, 27 assists for 54 points. I mean, you can talk about, you know, for a while there, you know, when you're talking about small sample sizes or whatever else, you know, that's valid.
Yeah.
When you hit the 42-game mark, when you're talking about an entire half of a season and you're putting up more than a point per game.
1.3 points a game.
It's not a small sample size at that point in time. Well, it's this guy is that good.
Yeah, and I looked at who he'd been playing with, right? So I went from when Coach Maurice put him with Ehlers and Wheeler.
Yeah.
Because he had played the previous 37 games of to start 2015-16, he had played either with Perreault and Ehlers 21 times, Perreault and Stafford 15 times, and once he played with Ladd and Ehlers. And he had, in those 37 games, he had 23 points, 12 goals, 11 assists. And then he was injured, came back from injury. Maurice moved him onto the line with Wheeler, moved Wheeler onto the line with Ehlers and Scheifele.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that line really click. He started the season, actually, I looked at it as well, but so this season, I don't think he actually put Line A with Scheifele and Ehlers as a set line till game 10 this year, but they haven't looked back. And each player, as Ezra just said, and he's right, has a different sort of dynamic, you know, I mean, each guy can at the same time do a lot of the same things. They all have dangerous shots. Ehlers, to me, notwithstanding his own goal last night, has been just unbelievable this entire season. Like, you know, I mean, Maurice said, and Ehlers himself said, that they didn't feel like his start to the season was very good. That was the reason why he wasn't playing on the top line. But I think since then, he has been one of the most dynamic. And it's funny because, as you guys have both suggested and are right, Laine and Scheifele have both been, you know, excellent. But I just think Ehlers, across the board, especially for a guy in a sophomore season, when this is generally a time where guys kind of can take that step back because some other, you know, NHL teams are now kind of figuring out how to play against them.
Mm-hmm.
And Ehlers doesn't look like he's missed a step. I mean, his speed is unbelievable. And his vision to set things up is just, oh, I talk about vision again. Sorry.
What about this stat, guys? Heading into last night's game, the Colorado Avalanche as a team had scored 24 goals. Lyonnais and Scheifele combined had 20 goals. So two guys had almost as many goals as the entire Avalanche team. I mean, like, this line is doing something really special right now. And, you know, Drew, like, it's, you know, when you know, Dave mentioned, you know, Nick Ehlers, you got to think when Brian Little comes back, and, you know, we talked about Matthew Perreault as well, we don't expect Little to be back until the end of the month, but when he does come back, do you put Little back with Wheeler on the second line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, it's tough to break up Scheifele and Ehlers, right, the way they're playing. But Scheifele and Wheeler were so good at the end of last season. So these are great problems for Paul Maurice to have, though.
Yeah, I mean, these are, you know, for years and years and years, Ladd, Little, and Wheeler always ended up back together just because, you know, you break them up. But
well, they're not going to put him with Ladd because he's on the Islanders now, Drew. But
thanks, Ez. I appreciate that. But, you know, whenever they broke them up, they always ended up back together because there were really no other options. That was the line that had to drive the entire Jets team. Now with Scheifele coming into his own and Laine and Ehlers and then Little when he returns and Wheeler and you have so many more options now. When one line isn't clicking or isn't going on a certain night, you are able to change it up and see if you can get a little some more chemistry going. We saw last night that Paul Maurice, you know, did juggle the lines a little bit up front to try and make some get some guys going, to get some, you know, legs under them, to get some energy into the lineup, because that Jets team looked a little not lackadaisical, but they just looked a little bit off to start the game. So he knows that he has players who can play with other players, who are going to be playmakers really in any situation that they're in, as opposed to in previous years where he's like, well, if this one line doesn't drive the bus for this team, it's going to be a long night just because we don't have the other horses necessary.
He essentially said that. He essentially said, don't get used to lines, you know, because I'm going to, although it's interesting because, like I said, when I went back and was doing the actual research, it did appear that he kept certain guys together for the vast majority of the season.
Coaches always say that, but at push comes to shove, you know, Perry and Getzlaff always end up together. Ben and Sagan always end up together.
I was going to say Backstrom-Ovechkin.
Backstrom-Ovechkin always end up together. So, yeah, they're not guaranteed to play every shift together for all 82 games. But when they need a goal or when they need a boost, coaches generally will put the guys who work well together back together.
Right, and if Blake Wheeler ends up going back to the top line and then you have the Schwielers line reunited again with Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler, so then you have Patrick Laine playing on the second line with Brian Little, and whether it's Kyle Connor or whoever's on the left wing. I mean, the Jets have, I think, a top 10, maybe even top 5, top 6 forward group in the NHL. They really do. And you look at how many talented scorers they have here. And I'm not saying that the Jets are, you know, the greatest team in the world right now. I'm just saying that when you look at this team's ability to score goals right now, and they're starting to play better defensively, if it can all come together here. You know, the Jets are, you know, they've played the most games in the league right now. They're sitting in sixth in the Western Conference. But boy, there is a lot of young talent in this lineup, and we'll see what happens here. But you know, it's so much fun to watch.
Look, the Jets have. And I know, you know, you're a little more than a fifth of the way through the season. So it's not like you're, you know, at the All-Star break at this point in time. But the Jets have four forwards in the top 25 of NHL scoring.
We've never seen that before.
Yeah, you've never seen that. You used to see the Jets would have three forwards who play the least amount of ice time in the NHL as opposed to being in the top scoring. That was what we used to see, is guys who couldn't get on the ice for more than 3-4 minutes a game.
Well, when you see Mark Scheifele leading the league in points, and you see, you know, Patrick Laine with the, you know, most goals and you know, most points for as a rookie, and yeah, as he's right, the Jets have played the most games, but it's clearly something. And you know, I wrote about him. Dreger wrote about him. I think Craig Custance wrote about Scheifele yesterday, and everyone is queuing in on what he's doing right now.
Because
and
the balance that he's doing it, you know, he's not one-dimensional. It's, I mean, you know, to the point, you know, looking back to, as we did since last February 18th, it's 27 goals, it's 27 assists.
Yeah.
So far this year, it's 10 goals, it's 10 assists. He's coming at you every which way. He's coming at you as a scorer. He's coming at you as a passer. He's coming at you as a distributor. He's coming at you as a sniper. It's pick your poison with him right now.
The interesting thing to me about Mark Scheifele, though, is just, it's funny because, remember, if we go back to 2011, how everyone was crying.
Couturier.
Yeah, and look, both players fill a need, but the fact, and you never know what's going to happen. So it's easy to be able to look back and say, oh, of course that was going to happen, or, you know what I mean? So, like, and Scheifele could have not panned out. Turns out that he did. He's played, you know, but he really is a guy dedicated to his craft, and he works so hard on developing. And, you know, Dreger had, in his Dreger report yesterday, wrote about how he, Scheifele, after every game, goes over his goals with Adam Oates. He goes, you know, and he said, I always go over my clips with Oatsy after every game. I don't spend a lot of time watching video of other guys, but I watch hockey. I watch the Pittsburgh Penguins play, and I'll zero in on Sidney Crosby. And I'll watch the Edmonton Oilers play, and I'll zero in on Connor McDavid. That's kind of how I learn. And it just goes to show you, like, this is a guy who just wants to keep getting better and better. And so, is he the top center in the NHL? Maybe we're going to talk about that next week. But the fact of the matter is, he's becoming more and more a part of that discussion.
Yeah.
And the fact is, if you're the Jets team, a draft and develop team, and you've got, you know, a guy who's now being mentioned in that sort of conversation, you've done something well.
You've drafted and developed well in this instance.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we preview tomorrow afternoon's game against the Los Angeles Kings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
around center, and then pass missed Carlson. Now Carlson waits, walks in, and shoots. Gouda makes the save. Loose puck, they better win.
Gord Miller with the call.
Gordo.
Ottawa Senators come back and defeat the Los Angeles Kings last night in the nation's capital. The Kings are going to be an angry Los Angeles Kings team as they head into Winnipeg on Sunday afternoon, playing their third game in four nights. So for the record, the Jets are not able to use that as an excuse no matter what happens on Sunday. Ottawa was in Montreal on Thursday where they got Carey Price'd. They had the lead late in the game last night in Ottawa. They scored, gave up two third period goals, including that game winner by Winnipegger Mark Stone, to lose to the Ottawa Senators. So it's a disappointed and angry Los Angeles Kings team and injured Los Angeles Kings team that comes into Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon. Should mention that this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Guys, this is the Los Angeles Kings team riddled with injuries. We know that. They lose Anze Kopitar last night. He leaves the game. No idea about his status. Won't know that until close to game time tomorrow. Jeff Zatkoff, who I don't know if he's their starter or their backup or whatever he is. Jeff Zatkoff also injured last night. Expect that it's going to be former...
Temporarily.
Jets property.
St. John's Ice Caps.
St. John's Ice Caps property. Peter Budaj in net for the Los Angeles Kings. This is a Kings team that, you know, they're the Kings team that we know. They don't score a lot of goals. They don't give up a lot of goals. But they are a severely injured and banged up Los Angeles Kings team at the end of a road trip tomorrow afternoon at MTS Center.
Yeah, but I mean, it's which team isn't banged up right now? You look at the Dallas Stars last night. The Dallas Stars are more banged up than anybody, and they beat the Edmonton Oilers. So, I mean, I you know, we got to, you know, mention that, Drew, but you can't take this team lightly. And even though, you know, this team didn't make the playoffs a couple of years ago, and they made the playoffs last year but went out in the first round, you know, this is still a good team. And, you know, I didn't pick the LA Kings to be a playoff team this year, Drew, but, you know, they've still got a lot of firepower. Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, I mean, even Dustin Brown's playing pretty well here after being stripped of the captaincy and it was given to Anze Kopitar. So they're the weakest in goal right now. Let's be honest. If Peter Budaj is in net for the LA Kings tomorrow, I mean, that's going to be a nice little target for Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele and some of the other top scorers for
the Jets. He's played pretty decently. I mean,
he's not Jonathan Quick, Drew.
No, he's not Jonathan Quick. But I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, for all due, you know, all due respect to Peter Budaj in that he has, this is a guy who probably didn't expect to be playing at all for the Los Angeles Kings this season. And he has stepped in and he has not been bad for the Kings. He's got a 9.12 save percentage. He's got a 2.08 goals against average. So you can't, I mean, he's 7-5 in his, you know, in the games that he's played. So he does get a little bit of credit for in that he, look, Peter Budaj, I think most people would have thought that his NHL career was over. And I'm not saying that he's resuscitating it into be a, you know, a starting NHL goaltender. But he is playing decent hockey for the Los Angeles Kings and is helping them at least tread water in the Western Conference.
He let in two goals and 15 shots yesterday, so I don't know how good that is. But, yeah, I'll agree with you, Drew. I mean, his numbers are good. They're respectable. Yeah. For a guy that we didn't think would even be a backup goalie in the NHL, we thought he'd just be in the American Hockey League, Dave, sure give Peter Budaj credit. But, you know, this Kings team, I still think when I look, match up the Jets and the Kings with or without injuries, I think the Jets are a better team, but you can't take them lightly. Well, I mean, they have... You know, a guy like Devin Setoguchi's come in there, and he's actually played pretty well. We mentioned Dustin Brown, Brown Dowd, and Devin Setoguchi are on that third line. So certainly not a pushover team. And when you have Drew Doughty on the back end, he's the best defenseman in the league. He's going to play 25 minutes tomorrow afternoon. You can guarantee it. So, you know, it's a game that, you know, maybe on paper the Jets should win. You know, the Jets hammered the Kings last year at home. So, and the Kings, we should mention, have been horrible on the road this year. Two wins in 8 games.
Yeah, bad on the road. No argument there. I mean, the Andre Kopitar status is a big one. You know, if the Kings are without Andre Kopitar tomorrow,
that's a huge loss for them, Drew.
Oh, I mean, that's you've now lost your best goaltender in Jonathan Quick.
And Kopitar would match up most likely against the Scheifele line.
That's right. And now Andre Kopitar, who is might not be the flashiest in terms of the points, but he's one of the best two-way centers in the entire league. You put him out of the lineup, and then you look at the LA Kings roster, and I mean, they're thin everywhere if Andre Kopitar is not in the lineup tomorrow afternoon against the Winnipeg Jets.
I had this vision when I saw Zadkov go down with the injury. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if the LA Kings traded for Andre Pavlik?
Oh, but we talked about that a few weeks ago.
I know because I simply because of the rumors, all the rumors that they were kicking tires on Pavlik, and I thought, wouldn't that be interesting if they traded for Andre Pavlik, and then Andre Pavlik was starting against the Jets in his return to NHL action? It would be somewhat of an sweet game, a little bit of sweet irony, as he's got a point.
Andrew, we're not going to have to wait till tomorrow to find out if Kopitar's playing, because we got LA Kings insider John Rosen coming on.
Oh yeah, but they won't know he won't know his status, I'm saying.
Yeah, he might provide some clarity.
He might provide some clarity as to the type of injury that it was or how serious it looked, but I do not think there's not been an injury update given from the Los Angeles Kings team as of yet.
Lisa Dillman of the Los Angeles Times did tweet yesterday that Kopitar would be traveling with the team to Winnipeg.
As opposed to back to LA.
As opposed to going
right, so,
back
you know,
to LA.
We'll see, though. I mean, right now, there's a chance he doesn't play. There's a chance he does play.
Well, anytime a guy leaves a game, you know, it's never a great sign for the next game, particularly, you know, right at the, you know, a quick turnaround from, you know, playing Friday night to playing Sunday afternoon.
Well, it's similar to the Myers situation, like in the sense that Kopitar sustained the injury yesterday, came back out for one more shift, and then left the game and didn't return.
Right.
So,
and that shift is just to test out how it feels.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, you're right, Drew. There's no question. If you lose a player of that caliber and he's not in the game to defend against the power that is, you know, Scheifele, Laine, and Ehlers, that really does open up an LA team that they've been middling, right? They haven't been. They're right in the middle of the pack in terms of goals for. They're right in the middle of the pack for goals against, and they've been terrible on the road. Which, you know, I mean, it goes to show you that Paul Maurice really has to have his coaching druthers about him to take advantage of the matchups and being able to, you know, show that. I mean, how do you lose that game yesterday? You're winning 1-0 for most of it, and then you lose 2-1 with 6.5 seconds. I think Mark Stone scored.
You're saying the Kings, you know,
would have been a
second half of a back to back. That would have been a very good win for the Los Angeles Kings.
Right, exactly.
Instead, it turns into a very demoralizing loss.
Horrible. Those are the types of, and you could say, yeah, they're going to come in to Winnipeg and they're going to be surly, but like, so is Winnipeg not going to be surly because they lost on a bad goal in Colorado? You know what I mean? So
they can be as surly as they want, but if Andre Kopitar is not in the lineup, they just don't have they have nobody who can match up against the Jets. I mean, nobody, you know, no forward group that can match up against the Jets' top line with Kopitar out of their lineup.
How many times can we say surly in the next 2 minutes?
Well, probably a lot, but we're not going to test that out. But I that's what you have with the Los Angeles Kings. What they do so well is they play as a 5-man unit so well. And
their power play has been awful this year.
Well, I meant in terms of their defensive zone responsibilities.
Right. And you know what, Drew? To your point, and we've talked about this before, there aren't many teams that play the heavy style anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the LA Kings are one of those teams that play that style with or without Milan Lucic in the lineup. So it's a team that doesn't give you a lot of room. And it, certainly if Andre Kopitar is in the lineup, it's tough to get anything going. Andre Kopitar is one of the best defensive forwards in the game. Mm-hmm. Has been for a very long time.
Yeah.
But this is a team that is physical. They have guys that can throw the body around. So, you know, it's not going to be a blowout, that's for sure. I mean, I do think that the Jets will win this game, and they should win this game, especially if Kopitar's out of the lineup. But, you know, it's a good opportunity here for them to get a win. And you got a tough Chicago game coming up on Tuesday at home. So, and a 5-game road trip after that. So
sure. I mean, you're catching the Kings at a good time.
Yep.
Again, they're at the end of a road trip. They're, you know, the Jets coming home after, you know, playing 3 and 4 nights. So both teams are on an even keel at that point in time. Both teams have injuries, so that's certainly a factor too. But I would say that the Kings' injuries are of a more significant level right now than the injuries that the Jets have suffered.
Jonathan Quick's injury to the LA Kings is the same, I think, as Carey Price's injury was to the Habs last year.
just season ruining almost.
One of the top goalies in the league, everything they do depends on, you know, getting timely saves from Jonathan Quick. And Peter Budaj's done a good job in relief here, but you're talking about a guy who had 40 wins last year in Quick, right? So he's a top five goalie in the league, and, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I thought that they were going to be in tough in the Pacific Division to make the playoffs this year, and it's really early. I mean, we're talking about playoffs in November here, but certainly without Quick, you know, between the pipes, it's a big loss for the Kings.
It's a tremendous loss, and then the only way to compound that loss any worse is losing Anze Kopitar, which they did last night in Ottawa, and that's the problem. Is you just they're not the Los Angeles Kings that were the perennial Stanley Cup contender, Stanley Cup champion. They're just too thin. They don't have any depth anymore. They don't have any depth up front, really, to speak of. They don't have any depth on the back end. They're not, I mean, you know, they have probably three of the best players in the league in Doughty, in Kopitar, and in Quick. But underneath that, there's a lot of, and Jeff Carter, obviously, is very good. And, you know, Pearson and Toffoli are good players as well. But after that, it's getting pretty thin pretty quick there.
Drew, just a quick stat here. The Kings lead the league with 482 hits. The Jets are eighth, 333 hits.
Well, the Jets would probably say you can't hit, but you can't catch. So the Jets will use their speed against the Kings tomorrow, and the Kings will try and use their physicality against the Jets.
It's going to be an old-fashioned slobber knocker tomorrow afternoon.
Well, slobber knocker was not one of the words we were planning on using, but go for it.
I'm just going to go to break instead. And when we come back, Dan Rosen of NHL.com is going to join us to talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony, the Hockey Hall of Fame weekend. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'm ready for
hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From NHL.com, we are pleased to welcome to the program Dan Rosen. Dan, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Doing very well, Dan. How about yourself?
Doing well. Sitting in Toronto.
Sitting in Toronto? What could be better than sitting in Toronto, right?
it's a good spot, you know. Good weekend. Always a fun weekend, Hall of Fame weekend. I always enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Doing it for a while now, so it's always a good time.
Well, that's why we brought you on, is to talk about the Hall of Fame weekend that the NHL is in the midst of. It was the ring ceremony and the honoring at the game last night. And then on Monday, of course, is going to be the formal induction ceremony for Rogie Vachon, the late Pat Quinn, Sergei Makarov, and Eric Lindros. Yeah, safe to say that Eric Lindros maybe stole the show a little bit last night or yesterday, particularly with his, I guess, his conversation that he had with Paul Holmgren not that many years ago.
I guess. I mean, he let the cat out of the bag. I honestly, you know, a lot was made of that. But, I mean, if you saw Lindros's reaction when he was talking about it yesterday, he was floored that it was even put on the table by Paul Holmgren, what was it, 4 years ago, off of what he saw in an alumni game. You know, so, look, make of that what you will. It would have been 5 years after he retired, and it's not as if Eric Lindros was exactly at the top of his game when he did retire. Anybody can believe what they want. I find it hard to believe that Eric Lindros would have been a valuable player for the Philadelphia Flyers 4 years ago at the age of, what, 38, with all his concussion history, and 5 years after he stopped playing. I find that hard to believe. But he laughed about it. Clearly, Paul Holmgren seemed fairly serious about it. I read the story on TSN from Frank Saravalli about that, and he seemed very serious about it. But I guess Eric did not seem so serious about it.
I think, Dan, for Big E to return at that point in his career, he'd have to find out the same gym, find out where Jaromir Jagr's working out at.
Well, the difference is Jagr's played. You know, like, he never stopped playing. He played in 3 years in the KHL, and Jagr's a fitness freak. I mean, the guy keeps himself in impeccable shape. He skates all the time. He's always on the ice. He's the first guy in, the last guy out. He goes to the gym in his apartment. I remember when he was living in New Jersey, he lived in some apartment complex, and he would go home from games and go to the gym, or go home from morning skates and go to the gym. It's just his body's just different than everybody else's, I think.
Yeah, that's
but
what
Lindros didn't play. He played. It was done for 5 years before that.
Dan, you wrote about Sergei Makarov on NHL.com yesterday, and you know he was maybe the forgotten guy as far as the this year's inductees go. And you know Makarov is a guy that you know didn't have the longest NHL career because he played in Russia for many years before he came over and was a rookie with the Calgary Flames. But do you think with his induction into the Hall of Fame, and Igor Larionov, as you know, is already in the Hall of Fame, you know, that KLM line, Krutov being the other member of that line, do you think some hockey fans are really going to appreciate the type of impact that he had on the game, not only in the NHL, but internationally, you know, in Russia in the 1980s and 90s?
Well, you should. They should appreciate it because, I mean, that was a dynasty. That Red Army team was an absolute dynasty, and he was the leading scorer in, I think, in Russia for 8 or 9 consecutive seasons. It was actually remarkable. It's remarkable what he was able to do, and then able to come over here in 1990 and win the Calder Trophy was also quite remarkable. They changed the rule because of him. In terms of the age restriction on that, he was a dynamic player for that Red Army team, you know, in the 80s and a little, you know, late 70s and certainly through the 80s. What was interesting to me is he really doesn't like talking about himself. Like he looks at hockey as very much hockey is a team game, and if we're going to talk about it, we're going to talk about the team. So anytime it's brought up, even the KLM line, he also absolutely mentions Fetisov and Kasatanov for the defensemen as part of that Russian five unit. He thinks they all should be on the Hall of Fame. Right now, it's him and Larionov and Fetisov. Kasatanov and Krutov are not. I think they're long shots to get in. They didn't have the success at the NHL level that Fetisov had, that Larionov had, and that Makarov had. So I think that holds them back. But if it's up to him, all of them are in, plus Tretiak, who are already in. And all the guy does is talk about the team. And he even looks at it and said, if we never won anything and, you know, I got into the Hall of Fame, it would not be meaningful because it's an individual award, and what matters is the team awards. So he's a real interesting guy, real interesting guy.
Dan, you wrote about someone who you share a last name with in Sam Rosen, who won the 2016 Foster Hewitt Memorial Award. What was he deserving of that award?
Well, it's funny. I share a last name with him, and actually my father's name is Sam Rosen, too. Sam Rosen, the broadcaster, is not my father.
And we have John Rosen coming up in the last hour of the show, so we're getting all the Rosens taken care of.
No relation there either. No relation there either. I'm the only Rosen from my family in the hockey world. I can promise you that. You know, Sam's been doing it for so long with the Rangers, going on, 32 years, as the voice of the Rangers, signature voice in New York sports, really just so well known, a treasure really in New York sports. And he's been doing it for so long, and he's been doing it well for so long, consistently well for so long. He's had three broadcast partners. The first one was Phil Esposito for 2 years, and then he worked with John Davidson for 20 years. Talk to John Davidson about Sam Rosen, and he will not stop talking to you about Sam Rosen. Joe Micheletti for the last 11 years has been his broadcast partner, and Joe Mick will not stop talking about Sam Rosen and how much they appreciate him, respect him, and believe that he makes them better. It makes the broadcast better. Really remarkable. And the thing is that it's a falling into an opportunity with Sam Rosen too. He kind of gravitated to the opportunity. They came to him at the Garden, the Madison Square Garden Network came to him, and I believe it was 1984, and asked him, we needed to make a change for our voice of the Rangers. Will you be it? And it was hard for him because Jim Gordon, who was the voice earlier, was his mentor. But it was basically, hey, Sam, we're going to make a change. Is it going to be you or not? And he had to take it. And it was a hard thing for him with Jim Gordon. They didn't stay quite as close as they did. But in the end, it ultimately changed Sam Rosen's life because of that decision that he made. And he's remarkable.
Dan Rosen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dan is with NHL.com. We're discussing the Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend, which is this weekend in Toronto. Dan, in addition to Sam Rosen being inducted, Bob Verdi, formerly with the Chicago Blackhawks, or he's now the Chicago Blackhawks historian, he was with the Chicago newspapers for almost three decades, is being inducted as the Elmer Ferguson Memorial Award winner. You know, is this sort of that hockey historian, journalist combination role? Is that a role that we're seeing less and less of as teams, as the access just isn't the same as it was back in the 70s and the 80s, and teams are, how do I want to put it delicately, I guess, just much more reticent to let journalists really see the players and get to know the players to the same extent that they were able to do so 20, 30 years ago?
Well, I think teams should do it more, and they can hire the guys to do it themselves and write for the sites, like the Blackhawks have done. The Philadelphia Flyers have also done it with Jay Greenberg, who is in the Hockey Hall of Fame after, you know, in the writers category. I think teams should do it more because the history of this game is so important, and to have people who are part of the history. I mean, Bob Verdi's part of the history of the Chicago Blackhawks and of the NHL. Jay Greenberg, the same way in Philadelphia. And we have one guy, Dave Stubbs, who is part of the history in Montreal and is an incredible hockey historian. And he's now writing for us, and it's tremendous because he's providing stuff for our website that we would never have if we didn't have Dave Stubbs working for us. And it's great stuff. Like, he flew yesterday to the Hall of Fame from Montreal to Toronto with Rogi Vachon, and, you know, and wrote about Dave, this is Dave, wrote about how when he was a 9-year-old boy and living in Montreal, he wrote a fan letter to Rogi Vachon, who wrote back. And I mean, that type of stuff, it's different from the typical, the normal hockey reporting and hockey journalism that I do and that a lot of us do, but I think it's a real valuable thing to have because if not, it's just going to get forgotten about, the history of this game. And the history of this game is so important. And if you talk to any, you know, people in hockey, they always talk about the history of the game. And even some young players coming in know the history of the game really well. Dylan Strome with the Arizona Coyotes, is, you know, you ask around that locker room and they'll tell you he's a walking encyclopedia with history of the game. He loves that stuff. And I think it's important that players and fans understand where they were, you know, where this was beforehand. And more teams should have, I really believe that more teams should have it and give the access to these guys to let them tell the history of this game.
Yeah, Dan, speaking of journalism, you had a great article on Thursday about Blue Jackets president of hockey operations, John Davidson, and his wife, Diana, and her battle with cancer today in Columbus. It's their Hockey Fights Cancer Night. What was it like for you to write that article, and how special of a night is it going to be for the Davidson family tonight in Columbus?
Well, it's always special to write the articles like that because you're talking to people who have fought the disease and have conquered the disease to the best that they can conquer it. I mean, Diana Davidson she's a CrossFit champion. She's a very fit woman, a competitive exercise, you know, very fit woman. And two of the takeaways from doing that story was, number one, the Davidsons and how they, you know, they're just champions of early detection, because Diana might not be here right now if she didn't have early detection. She sort of detected herself after a workout and immediately went and got a mammogram and got it early, to the point where she didn't even need to get chemotherapy because it never attacked her lymph nodes, the breast cancer that she had. So that's number one. And number two is the way that John Davidson and Diana sort of made it out to be like, hey, you know, you're disappointed. You have to get over it and you have to start the fight. And I thought that was so interesting because John Davidson equated it to, like, all right, we're in this game now. How do we win it? And just that's the competitor in them. So doing those stories like that they touch you on a different level than just doing a regular hockey story, so to speak. I did another one a couple of weeks ago with John Cooper and Tony Colton, a 16, now 17-year-old kid in Tampa who's got undifferentiated sarcoma, which is a very rare childhood cancer. He's had multiple operations, but he is still walking around and trying to live his life the best he can be. And it's just a real, you know, his prognosis isn't great, but he has a new friend in John Cooper, and he's on a first name basis with a lot of the Lightning players now. He's at a lot of the games, and it just touches you in a different way than just doing a regular story. It really does. And, you know, to be able to tell that story so other people can understand it, it's sort of it's a privilege, I think.
Dan Rosen, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, those cancer survivors and those who fought cancer certainly are the real Hall of Famers, Dan. But shifting awkwardly, as the case may be, back to the induction
any
ceremony.
Any shift there would be awkward.
Yeah, any shift there would be awkward.
Dan, Drew's just an awkward guy in general.
There's also that aspect. Rogie Vachon, you mentioned that Dave Stubbs flew with him from Montreal to Toronto for the ceremony. You know, Rogie, you know, it's been written about, you know, he could have had a great career, you know, sort of as the understudy to Ken Dryden or as the backup goalie in Montreal for, you know, during those cup-winning 70s teams for the Habs. But he said he wanted more, and they sent him to Los Angeles where he would be the starting goaltender. Is his contribution to sort of Los Angeles hockey history sort of unappreciated by the rest of the NHL community, and maybe that's why it took him so long to get inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Maybe, yeah. I think you're onto something there. I mean, remember, it happened in the 70s.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's a couple of generations ago now. And when he went there, it's not like his, you know, he was piling up wins. The team was bad for a number of years. I mean, he played 28 games his first year there after getting traded, and he won six.
Mm-hmm.
In his next year, he played 52 games. He won 22 of them. You know, it wasn't really until Marcel Dion arrived that they started to get good, to be respectable in L.A. He certainly sacrificed a lot of wins. He had 355 for his career. He would have been over 400 if he was on a better team for a number of years there. But he recognized, and I give him a lot of credit, like, look, Ken Dryden was the number one goalie after 1971 in Montreal. He recognized it, and he said, trade me anywhere so I can be a number one goaltender. He was still young enough at the time, felt that he could be a real influence, and he was. He was a significant influence in hockey in Los Angeles. And let's not forget, he was the MVP, I believe. He was the MVP of the 1976 Canada Cup, too.
That's right.
That helps his cause to get into the Hall of Fame. His numbers compare favorably to other goaltenders of his generation, and he was on a bad team for a number of years.
Last one for you, Dan. Pat Quinn, obviously the late Pat Quinn, passed away a number of years ago now, represented by his daughter at the ceremony yesterday, Callie Quinn. You know, just, you know, his influence, and it's,
yeah,
you know, for so many years he was the cause celeb as his health was failing and he wasn't able to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and then it eventually happens. You know, obviously it would be a better weekend if he was there, is it bittersweet, or is it still a fitting tribute to a man who was a tremendous hockey lifer and hockey coach?
Well, it's bittersweet, I think, because guys like this, you wish they were alive to be a part of the honor. And Pat Burns being the same way from a couple of years ago, you know, you wish that they would have gotten this before they passed. Now, Pat Burns, we had a better idea of what was happening with him. With Pat Quinn, it was more of people knew maybe his health was failing, but he never really let on to how bad it actually was. So in that sense, I think it's bittersweet, but in talking to his daughter, you know, Callie, yesterday, she is completely honored to speak on behalf of her father. It's given her the window to say things. As she said to me, it's given me the window to say things that he would never say about himself, because he was a humble man in that sense. And that's I think, is going to make her speech Monday night, you know, quite interesting. But you think about a career in hockey. My goodness. He was a player for about a decade. He won the Jack Adams twice. He won an Olympic gold medal, broke that 50-year streak in Canada, a World Cup in 2004. Then he goes and he wins a U18 and a U20 gold medal. Like, yeah, you know, he won a Memorial Cup. What a phenomenal career in hockey. And, you know, when you think about the career in hockey, you almost wonder, why didn't he get this when he was still alive? Mm-hmm. I mean, he did all these things, obviously, when he was alive. And, you know, sometimes with the builders category, they just wait a little bit too long, I think.
I agree with you there. Dan Rosen from NHL.com. Dan, really appreciate your time. And, you know, a great weekend in Toronto, of course, with the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And thanks for breaking it all down with us.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Dan. Thanks very much. It's at the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, our remembrances of those who are being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Big thanks to Dan Rosen of NHL.com for joining us to talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony weekend. Reminder, the actual ceremony available Monday evening, I believe, on TSN2. So if you want to see the late Pat Quinn, Sergei Makarov, if you want to see Rogi Vachon, and if you want to see Eric Lindros inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, Monday, TSN2 is where you need to be. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Dave, as he went to warm up his coffee yet again.
Yep.
Talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony weekend, it is always a good weekend. It's always a great opportunity to honor these significant contributors to the world of hockey.
Okay.
You know, it's like Dan said, though, it's sometimes with the in the builders category. It is a little bit of a shame that they wait so long and a guy like Pat Quinn can't be there to... He would regale the audience with stories of... a legendary career in hockey, and Sergei Makarov, with you know, who will be there, has a legendary career. Eric Lindros, you know, in case you missed it yesterday, what he said is that Paul Holmgren, years after he retired, offered him a contract to come back and play with the Philadelphia Flyers. Maybe it's a good thing Holmgren isn't their general manager anymore. And then, of course, the last inductee, Rogi Vachon, who'd waited 34 years after his career ended to finally get the call from the Hockey Hall of Fame to be inducted. I always find it bizarre with Hall of Fames that they decide that, you know, yeah, you're a Hall of Famer, but we're going to make you wait 34 years or something along those lines before you get the honor. And baseball does the same thing oftentimes. This is Tim Raines' last time being eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame, and there's some thought that maybe he'll finally reach the necessary threshold this time to be a Hall of Famer. I always find that to be a bizarre formality regarding some Hall of Fames.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. It's worse than just kind of bizarre. I think it's a shame, you know, for a guy like Pat Quinn to not be able to share the stories of his hockey world with the audience. I mean, the fact of the matter is, and we know this because we talk to players all the time, and you know, Dan Rosen just alluded to that. The fact is, you don't get the really in-depth, honest view, because a lot of times players are not wanting to necessarily share as much with the media and with the outside world as they did maybe a few years ago, because of course social media isn't what it is now back then. So you get the stories from these players, and again, if you're someone who loves hockey, like I would assume most of our listeners do, you really do have a love of the game, and hearing the stories from guys like Pat Quinn and Sergei Makarov and, you know, Rogi Vachon and all of those guys who have, you know, different eras. That's the nice thing also, right? Like, you've got guys who are from playing, and Eric Lindros, of course, but so you've got guys who have played in all these different eras, who have all these different stories. And I've done events where, you know, like I did the human race for the Health Science Center, and you talk to former NHLers, and the stories they'll tell you then are hilarious. And they're, and you know, like, and I mean, the stories I heard about the Oilers from the 80s aren't the stories you hear when the Oilers were in the 80s. Oh, maybe a little bit more, but you know what I mean? It's that idea that you're getting insight.
The oral history of the world of hockey.
Right. And you're getting insight that you don't get every day. Even like I said, I'm around the team all the time and I don't get that type of insight. I mean, do a little bit, but not to the same degree, because they there's a freedom, right? These guys have, there's nothing that's holding them back from speaking what they, you know, their minds and saying what they have to say. And again, going back to telling the stories, you know, hearing about the Stanley Cup victories or hearing about, you know, the defeats in the Stanley Cup or any of those sort of tales of you know, just like I said, signing guys like, you know, Quinn, you know, going and meeting with someone. I mean, his daughter being there to accept the award is nice for the family, but it doesn't share with the hockey world any of the insight that we would get other than from a daughter speaking to her father's legacy.
Sure. Ezzy, your thoughts on the inductees this weekend at the Hockey Hall of Fame? You know, Eric Lindros is the one that for all of us probably jumps out to mind more than anyone, although I remember Makarov coming over in the mid-80s to play for that Calgary Flame. But, I mean, he was...
The Gretzky of Russia.
Yeah, I mean, he was at the tail end of his career almost at that point in time.
He was 31, right?
Something like that, and that's why they changed the... And he won the Calder Trophy, and then they changed the rule that you had to be under a certain age at that point in time. Obviously, there's no 31-year-old rookies anymore, but that had to do with, you know, the communism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, Drew, we talked about it on this show a couple of years ago. I've said all along that I thought Eric Lindros should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I think I even wrote an article about it, and that's going back, you know, 5 or 6 years or something like that. So, I mean, you look at what he did, and sure, his career was cut short because of the concussions. You know, you can thank Scotty Stevens for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what he did in a short period of time, I mean, he was well over a point per game as an NHL player. And not only that, I think Lindros was the best power forward of all time. I don't think anybody did what he did as far as being able to score 50 goals, 100 points, and also just bash everybody all over the ice. I mean, the guy was a serious force on the ice. So he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But for me, Drew, what the 2016 Hockey Hall of Fame class is all about, it's different than previous years. You know, you look back to 2014, for example. It was Rob Blake, Peter Forsberg, Dominic Hasek, Mike Modano, guys that you knew were going into the Hall of Fame as soon as they were eligible, or shortly after they were eligible, they were going in.
Sure.
Guys that were stars in the 1990s. To me, this Hall of Fame class is about guys that had to wait a little bit longer, whether it's Lindros or a guy like Sergei Makarov. I mean, Sergei Makarov could have been in the Hall of Fame years ago. His NHL career ended in the mid-90s. So, and then Rogie Vachon, you know, we talked to Dan Rosen about it. You know, Rogie Vachon, he's a guy that came into the league with the Kings in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't up there with the greats of all time. He's not going to be considered up there with Patrick Waugh or, you know, Dominic Hasek or Martin Brodeur, but certainly a very good goalie for many years. So it was a little different of a Hall of Fame class this year, but certainly, I mean, Pat Quinn, guys, for me, when his daughter was speaking yesterday, I mean, Pat Quinn, I mean, this guy, you know, I think kind of fitting. He used to be the chairman of the board of the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee.
Lanny McDonald does that now.
Yes, and, you know, it's incredible. I mean, Pat Quinn, I mean, the big Irishman, I mean, what he did, not only in the league as a general manager and a coach, but as a player, I mean, what he did with the Canadian teams at the international level, I mean, this guy's legacy. I mean, when you talk about hockey, I mean, he's done it all, right? So, you know, it's really special to see him get inducted this year.
When we come back, Scott Powers joins us. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll talk about the Jets' opponent on Tuesday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.